Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta. Do you like your endings all wrapped up neatly, or do you want to be on the edge of your seat? From Dickens to Dallas, cliffhanger endings have been around for hundreds of years, and the suspense is still going strong. Beth Elderkin is a staff writer for the science fiction fantasy blog IO9, and she joins us to talk about the history of cliffhanger endings.
So a cliffhanger is any time a story ends without its actual conclusion, without its resolution. So it ends on a mystery, something that needs to be resolved or solved by the next episode or installment. And so, yeah, that's basically what a cliffhanger is in a nutshell.
Yeah, and doesn't it have roots in like, aren't we hardwired kind of to want to know something? Like if we only hear part of a story, we say, well, what happened next? Tell us the rest. And isn't there a psychologist who did a study about this?
So Bluma Zagnarek actually conducted the study back in the 1920s. She was looking at people who were doing these puzzles. And for some of her subjects, she would let them complete the puzzle all the way through and then ask them the task, you know, ask them a series of questions. But then for some of them, she would interrupt them halfway through, and then she would ask them a series of questions. And for the times that she interrupted them and didn't let them complete their task, they tended to remember what they were doing more, because there is this, there is an imperative, there is a psychological desire to finish what we started.
Interesting. So how far back do cliffhangers go?
Well, there are some people who will say, you know, have different interpretations on when the first cliffhangers started, because it really goes back to the roots of storytelling itself. You know, you'd have, you know, parents telling kids their stories, grandparents, family members, you know, orators telling stories to, you know, spreading stories around. And they'd always, you know, sometimes they'd stop right before they get to the good part to get you enticed to hear the rest of the story. But one of the first, what's believed to be the first concrete example, although there are some people who claim otherwise, the first concrete example would be the Persian tale, 1001 Arabian Nights. And that one is because it's Scheherazade. It's framed around her as a woman. She has been married to the Sultan. He is going to kill her after they consummate their marriage, but she wants to obviously not die.
Of course.
Every night she tells him a story, and then she'll finish it, then she'll start another one but won't continue it. So he was so fascinated to learn what would happen in that story, he kept her alive for, you know, 1001 nights.
Right, very clever. Boy, yeah, that's clever. So when did cliffhangers become really popular?
So they really started becoming popular in the during the Industrial Revolution, because from the research that I looked at, this was when storytelling really took a big change. We've had a couple different big changes in how we consume media. You know, there's the television era, there's movies in general, and then there's also the Industrial Revolution, because it changed how people spent their time. You know, work was different. People had more free time. You know, they valued their free time differently, and they didn't want to waste their time reading a 400-page book over the course of several days. They didn't have the time for that.
Yeah.
So instead, they wanted to read things in installments. It's kind of the precursor to movies or television episodes. So people started creating these magazines, pamphlets. The Pickwick Papers from Dickens arose during this time, and he really set things off. And they would release books in chapters. And sometimes the chapters would end conclusively, and sometimes they would end on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, Dickens was like the kind of the big guy about the sort, almost kind of like the Stephen King of this serialized storytelling, wasn't he? Because there was like Dickens mania, all these Dickens fanatics.
And not only Dickens fanatics, but Dickens copycats. He essentially created this genre, partially because he was paid per word. So
of course,
he wrote and the more often he did, the more he would get paid.
Yes.
But it got to a point where he would get fan mail of people begging to keep their characters, his characters alive, or people would start, you know, fights because they wanted to be the first one to read the story. They'd have water cooler talk. But one of the more interesting things is how many copycats emerged during that time. There were hundreds of writers who were producing, and they just tried to write on his coattails the best they could.
Wow, yeah. And didn't one of Dickens' stories cause a riot?
Yes. So this is according to a story in a magazine, and I could not find the original article itself. I believe it was either New York or The New Yorker, where she talked about this time where people were trying to find out if this character named Nell survived, and this was a big cliffhanger. So they waited on the shore for the barge to come in with the latest edition. And then to be the first one to read it, they, you know, started a physical encounter so they could find out if she survived. And I'm sorry to say she did not.
Oh, dear. Yeah. You have that great line in the video version of your story.
So the use of cliffhangers became not only popular, but kind of essential. Some Victorians scoffed, calling them addictive, which, yeah, they are. But hey, they also gave kids opium for headaches, so they're not ones to talk.
That's great. So let's talk. We've talked a lot about cliffhangers, but we haven't really talked about this kind of obvious question about the origin of the name. I'm guessing they're not named after a guy named Cliffhanger who was dangling from a cliff and had this sudden epiphany about what a great way to keep people hooked to various entertainment products this would be. Or were they?
They were not, although, so, you know, funny enough, yeah, there is actually a G.I. Joe character whose name is Cliffhangers, and that's what he does. He hangs off cliffs.
Oh, really?
But,
cool.
Yes. So the root is, it's debatable. There are a couple situations where an actual dangling off the edge of a cliff was used as a cliffhanger, which is kind of where it comes from. Doctor Who has used it in the past. Perils of Pauline, which was a serialized film series. So it basically took the serialized storytelling of the Victorian era and moved it to film on screen, kind of precursor to television. That one used a cliffhanger, but it's believed to actually have come before it. And this would be Thomas Hardy back in the 1870s. Now, this was a very interesting story. It's a pair of blue eyes. I read through a bunch of the chapters. It's very hard to read these works, admittedly, because the language is so different than what we have now, but it's pretty easy to find the cliffhanger because there is a chapter that very famously ended with one of the woman's suitors dangling off the edge of a cliff, and she's trying to save him. She cannot, and he tells her to go run for help, and she does, and he's left by himself with no clue if he's going to survive. Luckily, he does survive, but then he dumps her, and then she dies.
That's gratitude for you. Jeez. My guess is that the first major use of cliffhangers on network television would be the Batman series, which aired on ABC from 1966 to 1968.
Can this, this be happening? Batman being made into a pineapple frosty freezy and Robin into a lime one? Has the diabolical Mr. Freeze outwitted the dynamic duo after all with some fancy ice work? Hope for a miracle and stay frozen in your seats. Until tomorrow, same time, same channel.
So yeah, so Batman and Robin was very much into cliffhangers because really the source of, you know, the comic books, you know, used cliffhangers really from the get-go. That comes back to foundings of comic strips. Desperate Desmond was a really famous example that came out in 1910, and the very first installment had Desmond hanging off the edge of a clock. Now that wasn't the first comic that used cliffhangers at the time, but it started out like that, and every single episode ended with one of those begging you to tune in next. So really, comic books have a really ripe history with cliffhangers because they're a serialized version of storytelling as a genre. They're not, you know, you don't have them as books or as comic books. The comic book is designed to be read as a serial installment.
Yeah, especially when you're camping it up as the original Batman TV series did. And then in the late 1970s, there were two sitcoms that aired, and both of them were satires of daytime soap operas. Norman Lear's Mary Hartman, and Susan Harris's Soap. Both of these shows also used cliffhangers, didn't they?
Is Bert's insomnia really space lag, or has he just been making up for lost time? Now that Jessica has met Leslie, does teacher's pet have new meaning? Will Danny find Polly? And if he does, what will he do? Now that Jessica has caught Chester and told him he can't come home, what will he do? How will he change his underwear? These questions and many others will be answered in the next episode of Soap.
Traditional TV would not do them at the time because they were really big on syndication. So they didn't want to have shows that they couldn't air out of order. Soap kind of took that and flipped it on its head, which is interesting because Soap, once it was released on DVD, was so hotly anticipated. This was 10, 15 years ago, that it sold really well on DVD because it was one of those first examples of that kind of serialized storytelling in television.
So 1980 marked a pivotal year in terms of cliffhanger mania here in the United States. What happened?
Yes. So that was when Dallas had its third season finale, and it ended on Who Shot JR, which anytime you hear those three words, you know exactly what they're talking about, even if you've never seen the show before.
Yes.
It was a huge cliffhanger that was a big risk for both the show and the network.
Who's there?
It was a risk that paid off because the nation became obsessed. I was looking at archived articles from that summer about how obsessed people were with finding out who had shot JR, and to the point where I don't even remember who actually shot JR because I was more fascinated with the mystery than conclusion. Yeah. People were, trying to sneak onto set so that they could, catch a glimpse, which is something we do a lot nowadays, especially with the Marvel and DC movies. It was a huge water cooler talk. It precursored Game of Thrones and all those different things. It was a nationwide phenomenon.
Yeah, it was just huge. It's amazing. The cover of People and other magazines and just all, it was all over the media that summer, yeah. What are the big cliffhanger TV shows these days? Game of Thrones? Westworld? What would you say? What shows use cliffhangers effectively these days?
I mean, I think the smaller question is going to be which shows don't.
Okay.
I mean, so much of television hinges on cliffhangers nowadays, whether it's the entire Arrowverse on DC. You've got Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, which is an amazing show. Highly recommend it.
Okay.
You've got Game of Thrones. You have Westworld. You have shows like The Bold Type, which, is about girls working in the city. You wouldn't expect that kind of show to have cliffhangers, and yet it does. Cliffhangers are in not only accepted form of storytelling, they're almost required nowadays, which is, it comes with its own risks because sometimes, the setup doesn't work the payoff. Handmaid's Tale just recently ended its second season with a cliffhanger that I will not spoil here because it just happened.
Okay.
But it's actually been very divisive among fans. I personally did not care for it. But it was kind of necessary for the sake of keeping the show going. So at one point, does a cliffhanger cease being for the sake of the narrative and for either survival or just to garner interest?
Yeah. But I would think, though, in our current age of binge watching, that cliffhanger endings would be less effective.
I mean, I think a good example of that would be Netflix's Stranger Things, because that gets binge released.
Yeah,
and
that's
yet,
right.
I've seen both seasons, and they a lot of the episodes end on cliffhangers. And then the season, of course, ends on a pretty big cliffhanger in both of the seasons. Yeah, I feel like with binge watching, the cliffhangers aren't handled the exact same way as they are on network television, because you get that conclusion immediately, which in some ways can make the cliffhanger even more intense.
Yes, that's true.
Because they don't have to wait on, they don't have to mitigate the risk of, if someone's going to get so frustrated without the resolution, are they going to quit? So you can do bigger things.
Yeah. So do you have an all-time favorite cliffhanger ending?
I do have one.
Can this really be the end of the interview? How will Beth answer Doug's provocative question? Will she answer it? Or will she decline to comment? Tune in next week. Same beta time, same beta station.
Beth Elderkin is a staff writer for the science fiction fantasy blog io9. You can find the answer to her favorite cliffhanger and learn more about Beth at wpr.org/beta.